This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready?
Welcome back, Showrunner listeners, to episode number 40 of the Showrunner podcast. I am your host, Jared Morris, and I am joined by my co-host, Johnny Naster, who is probably upset with me for starting this recording right now as he is still in the midst of getting his recording stuff set up.
Not so much upset as shocked.
Well,
yeah,
the first...
Is he actually doing this? Yeah, he actually is. I better be quiet.
Well, I find that, you know, on any type of show, when you get those candid moments, they tend to be the best. And plus, what were the first words that you said to me when we jumped on the phone today? Do you remember?
I forgot how to record.
Yeah. Which seems like an essential element for someone teaching a podcast.
Yeah, so just for some clarification, I didn't mean to take a full sort of holiday during this holiday season. I know it could sound silly, but I didn't. And I didn't actually stopped publishing episodes from, I think, the 22nd, mm-hmm. and until the 4th of January, which I haven't done since I started. I haven't not published an episode, but I just went for it this year. And I've fallen into this crazy just holiday of literally sleeping in crazy and just literally not even looking at email, not doing anything. So now all of a sudden Jared called me a few minutes ago and I didn't have a mic plugged in, couldn't find my headphones. It was a complete gong show. And I was so this is going to be fun, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to actually get to record.
Yes.
Get to the full conversation.
So tip number one for a better show in 2016, remember how to record. Because without that essential skill, you're going to struggle.
Take your much needed break.
Hey, you know what though? I'm glad you brought that up because I've kind of done the same thing. I mean, we took obviously our first week off of the Showrunner since we launched the Showrunner podcast. We took the week of Christmas off. We didn't release a new episode. I've obviously been on, more of an elongated break with Primility. I didn't take off for the assembly call just because those games are still going on. And so you can't really take that off, although there was a break between the 22nd and then the 30th. So I've kind of done the same thing, away from email, away from everything. And when I did, I had my first recording a couple of days ago, and it was kind of the same thing. I was struggling a little bit. And even when I started the recording, I felt like my normal podcasting voice was off. It's almost like I was listening to myself talk and I was like, whoa, I feel out of sync a little bit. So, and maybe that's a lesson, maybe don't record your first time back in front of the microphone. Maybe just do a private recording or, do something to kind of get in the flow again. Maybe don't have a jackass co-host who will hit record on you when you're still getting set up. Another important tip. Hey, let me ask you a question real quick. Back when we launched the Showrunner, our very first episode was Why Right Now is the Perfect Time to Start a Podcast. We'll link to it in the show notes, because if you haven't heard that episode, and if you're coming to the Showrunner podcast and you haven't started a show yet, but you're thinking about it, that's a great episode to start with. I'm curious what you think, Johnny, now that we're almost a year, since we released that episode, we're entering a new year, 2016. Is it still a good or even great time to start a podcast right now, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably better. So mm-hmm. I'm considering 2015 as the year that podcasting broke. But now 2016, it's kind of, I think, going to start to mature, but it's just an amazing opportunity. I still see people starting shows on a daily or monthly basis that are breaking through and hitting top tens and staying there and just building massive audiences really, really quickly. And so I honestly don't know why everybody doesn't start a podcast.
Yeah.
And I'll still say that I think all of 2016, because a year and a half into podcasting now of my latest show, it's I'm seeing just, it's not that it like peaked off at some point. It's actually like growing exponentially. And the whole thing of it is like, it's changed my business and my life. And so I honestly don't know why. And it's so easy to get started. So it's just one of those things, man. I just think it's amazing. And I can't wait to see what 2016 holds for podcasting in general.
Yeah. And I understand why people might be a little bit hesitant thinking, you know, the market has been flooded with so many new shows, but understand that there is a bigger market now of listeners too, who are coming to podcasts and recognizing this as an entertainment and education medium. And so there's that opportunity too. And don't underestimate just how many gaps in whatever your niche is, how many gaps exist. And so it's not just go start a podcast. You obviously want to launch it the right way and develop it the right way. But it's still a great time to start a podcast. And if you are coming to the show new, we look forward to walking you through some of the many steps involved in developing, launching, and running your successful show. And actually, this is a good time to let people know, Johnny, that on Friday, January 8th, so a couple of days after this episode goes live, you and I are hosting a live blab session. It's a public blab session, so we're going to invite the members of the Showrunner Podcasting Course, but also anybody else who wants to come. So you listening right now, we want you to be there. And if you go to rainmaker.fm/steps, STEPS, that URL will redirect you to the blab.im page where the show will take place. You can get subscribed to that so that you'll get a reminder about it, and then join us on Friday. And we're going to walk you through the 15 steps to a perfect podcast launch, which will be very useful for you either as a refresher, because some of these tips are still things that you can do once you've launched, but certainly for anybody who hasn't launched yet and is planning on launching in 2016, this will be essential education that you won't want to miss.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it is totally, you can use it just to relaunch your show based around new artwork or like a new format, or to launch a brand new show.
So yep.
These tips work.
So with that said, when we talk about essential advice, are you ready to dive into the 12 steps that we have prepared for a better show in 2016 to help every Showrunner listener make 2016 their best year of podcasting ever?
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. So, Johnny, we have prepared 12 steps to a better show in 2016. And what's really funny about this is we settled on this idea a little while ago and then kind of went into our separate corners to prepare this list and prepare these items. And I found it really interesting that my number one and your number one and my number two and your number two were almost exactly the same. I mean, obviously the wording is a little bit different, but the ideas are exactly the same. And we came up with these completely independently. So let's start with these first two. Mine was revisit and update your long-term goals, and yours was set three-month goals. Do you want to go into a little bit of depth with what you mean? Because this is something that you've talked about before, but what do you mean when you say set three-month goals?
I think long-term goals are really hard for us, especially like creating a new show, and it's hard to, you know, when you're sitting there kind of stopped and you're, I'm going to create this show and then I'm going to do all of these things or else I have a show and in a year's time, I want to be, it seems so far away that you can't really, I think, it's hard to get momentum behind yourself to think like, oh, it's going to be a year at some point. So by setting three-month goals, which I think are essential, and I think that they're, you have to find your metrics, but to me, two super important metrics to set these three-month goals around are your email list, the number of people on that email list, and the number of downloads you get. But as we've talked about so many times, these numbers fluctuate day to day, right? So when you're focusing on downloads and you see on one day that it dropped off and you're, oh my God, everything's, it's over. And it's like, well, no, it's just these things happen and you have to kind of look in a longer term, but not long term. So by setting a 3-month goal that in the 3 months from today or 3 months from January 1st, I want to be at this average monthly download sort of thing, and then ignore it till then and just sort of push yourself forward. Like, you have to check it because you need something to obviously be pushing towards, but you don't have to check it every single day, and you need to know that it needs to be on sort of like a monthly sort of basis. And an email list is the same, because we all say, oh, we want to grow our email list, but what does grow it mean? What does getting more, like, you need to kind of give yourself a specific, right? So if you want to have 500 people by the end of 3 months, then you can say, well, that's about 90 days. And you can determine how many people you need to get per day onto your email list. It breaks it down into a really simple and easy to achieve, I think, metric. And I think that it's really essential to do this. Otherwise, it's just some sort of blurry goal that I want to have 5,000 people by the end of the year. And it's like, well, that all sounds great, but it's really hard, I think, to get from zero to 5,000, but it's easier to get to these 3 month things. And then at 3 months, then you have to set the next 3 month goal. And obviously it's going to be ahead of what this one is. And so ultimately it can end up the same, and you can start with that 1 year goal if you want, but then break it down into four chunks, and start yourself off, I would think, easier. And then you can kind of build momentum as you go through the year.
Yeah.
But I find that this works really good because it can really keep you, I think, motivated and sort of invigorated on the goal. And we've started doing this actually with my mastermind. We're running our own 90-day challenges, we're calling them, which are the exact same thing, right? You just focus on one or two metrics in your show for 90 days and just go for it. And kind of everything else, you can kind of ignore it as long as you're still publishing and doing all your things. And those metrics will also move up because you're going to be focused so hard on pushing ahead in these other two metrics that I think it's a really cool way to go. And I think that it's a great way to make your show better in 2016.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea of 3 month goals, especially for measurable metrics like an email list, like downloads, because you're right. It helps keep those goals less blurry and more in focus. Where I think revisiting and updating long-term goals can really help is with maybe big milestones. So for example, like with Primility, I eventually want to have a book. And which is not a goal that I had really previously had. It had kind of been fuzzy, but setting that goal will now help me bring the rest of my content creation into focus because I know that I'm using it, you know, that I want to put out content that I can eventually repurpose for this book. And it helps me keep moving forward as opposed to where that project has been slightly rudderless and not quite all going in one direction. Revisiting those long-term goals, making sure you know the big picture direction that you want to go in, can help you stay on the general course. And then, Johnny, what you said about the 3 month goals can really help you more in that micro sense, you know, stay, you know, on that course that will keep you going toward the long-term goals. So I think a nice balance there is good. And definitely the 3 month goals is a great idea.
So for a book though, could you make like 3 month goal to create, say, 60 pieces of like micro content that could be repurposed into that?
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. That's why I think a blend is good, but without setting the big picture goal of like, okay, enough talking about it. Like this needs to happen by 2017. Boom, it's out there. Yeah. Set that as the big picture for where you're going. But like you said, it'll never happen if that's all it is. If it's just this hazy goal with a year number out here, like then it's got to, you've got to work backwards into the chunks for, okay, I want this to happen. Now, what do I actually have to do?
Yes. That's the key. I love that. Work backwards.
Yeah.
So it's true. Take that 1 year goal, work backwards in four parts of each of them. And then those are your 3 month goal.
Yep. All right, so I lied. I didn't mean to, but actually it wasn't both of our first two that were the same. It was actually your second one matches my third one. So I didn't mean to. I read this wrong. But let's go on to the next one. And so this is where we're the same. I said, find a more efficient way to do a recurring thing. And you said, build systems. And really, we're talking about the same thing. It's like, as an example, we do a pick'em for assembly call, where for all of the conference games, we have our audience pick who they think is going to win, and then we determine a winner at the end of the year by who has the most picks, and then we send them some cool gear as a prize. It's just a cool way to kind of get the audience involved. But our audience has grown, and so last year, the intern that we had did it all manually. People would submit the picks in the comment section. He'd do it all manually, and there's just too many people now that we're projecting who are going to be submitting picks to do that. And so we're using Rainmaker, we're setting up forms so that they can submit it via form, and then it goes into a spreadsheet, and then we've got, you know, this whole spreadsheet set up already with formulas so that once we input the raw data, it'll add up who's winning, give us the, you know, the standings, everything. And so this is a recurring thing. It'll happen, you know, there's 18 games, so it'll happen 18 times. and it's going to make it much more efficient and save time so that we can go do something else. And I think there are, you know, we've talked about lots of ways to make a GarageBand template or make show note templates or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing that's recurring, find a more efficient way to do that thing. And the way you do it, Johnny, as you said so simply and concisely, is simply to build systems.
Yeah, I think everything you do as a pod, like I honestly cannot think of anything you do as a podcaster that is not recurring. In like maybe not even recurring every episode, but like on a weekly basis or a bi-weekly or a monthly basis. From like finding guests, if you're looking for guests, to finding shows, other shows to be on, to getting artwork, to promoting, to publishing. These are all things that we do. The same thing is done every episode. It's just how it is. And so remember, you have systems. It's like, don't be freaked out by systems like I used to be freaked out and be like, oh, what are systems? It's like everything you do has a system. It's just usually super inefficient and doesn't make any sense because you haven't sort of analyzed it and made it more efficient. So everything you do in your show, take one of them at a time, whether it's now publishing the show notes or whether it's setting up to record, and literally document it and just write it down in a Google Doc. Each step that you do in order. And then after you're done that, look at it and be like, wow, that doesn't make any sense. I shouldn't do step 7. No, that doesn't. But it's, you have a system, trust me. For brushing your teeth to making coffee, you have a system. We all do these things habitually, and your show's the same. So just take one of them per month, even if that's all you want to do. But it doesn't matter. At least you'll have one system down. And the best thing is that not only will you get more efficient in it, but then eventually, once you get revenue in your show and your show grows and you want to, say, hire an assistant, you have these templated systems of these jobs and tasks that need to be done. And you can literally just link them to the Google Doc and here's how it works. And so you're really killing two birds with one stone, but you're making your show more efficient immediately as well. So build systems and don't be freaked out by them.
Yes. So we are roughly about 18 minutes into this episode. Some people say that's like the perfect length for a podcast episode. And so if you have to shut this off, if all you do is listen to those first two tips, a quick reminder. Number one, update your long-term goals and then work on them in three-month chunks. And number two, again, these are steps for a better show in 2016. Number two is build systems. So if all you do is listen to those, to these first two lessons, right, you'll have a better idea of where you're going and how to get there, and you'll get there more efficiently. And that, my friends, that is a key to a better show in 2016. So fortunately, for those of you who are going to stay longer than 18 to 20 minutes, we still have 10 more tips that we want to give you. And frankly, they're all just as useful as those. But I'm glad we hit those off at the beginning because, you know, they're, and we could probably say that every single year. Those could be the first two tips every single year because, I mean, I love what you said about how everything you do, you know, it's recurring. And you're so right about that. So find systems. All right. I'm going to go on here with my second one, Johnny, and then we'll get to your next one. My next tip is to upgrade your equipment if you've earned it. And so we talk on here a lot about what equipment do you need to start? And generally, we tell people you probably need less than you think. You clearly need a good enough microphone and a good enough setup to get that minimum level of audio quality that is demanded. It needs to sound good, but you don't need to be spending thousands of dollars on your audio setup to get going. We see too many people who procrastinate, and one of the reasons they procrastinate is because they want to get the perfect audio setup, recording setup, before they've even passed, you know, the 7-episode hump or before they've gotten to 20 episodes and really proven that they're committed to this. Don't do that. But once you have done that, and once you've proven to yourself, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to stick with this, I've got an audience now, upgrade your equipment. You know, I was, up until last year, I was using the same microphone. It was a decent microphone, you know, for the first 3 or 4 years that I was podcasting. And you know, I had this kind of awkward desktop stand. And finally last year, I said, enough is enough. And I got myself a boom arm and I got a PR40 microphone that I really like, you know, hooked it in with my H6. And it was a major upgrade to my setup. It's made my recording more efficient. Overall, it's made my quality better. And I had earned that. And it was great to be able to spend that money You know, and really be able to know, okay, I'm not getting this and then 3 weeks later, this project is going to die. I know I'm in this to win this. I've earned this. And so if you've reached that point, upgrade your equipment because you've earned that and it can really reinvigorate your own enthusiasm and even be a nice little change for your audience that shows them, hey, this show is going to keep growing. It's going to keep moving forward. You know, those little subtle cues will keep your audience with you because they know that you're in it for the long term.
Damn Jonah. Right.
Hell yeah.
So good. And this is so true of beyond even just equipment, right? We oftentimes will procrastinate on the littlest of things that don't really have an overall bearing to the success of your show. And we'll stop from launching because I'm waiting for the perfect artwork. Or I don't have the proper URL, or my website's not perfect, or I need better intro music, or I need to go to Podcast Movement 2016 before I can launch a show, otherwise I might miss something. And it's just endless, right? It's that all of these things can be changed later. And exactly as you say, earn it. Earn all of these things and then upgrade your equipment. Then get better artwork, then invest in a cooler intro. But you can really get started and get huge amounts of like momentum and success, like wins behind you with the most basic of basic equipment and website and artwork and intro music and everything. All of these things need to evolve. They need to just get better as you get better. And I think that you stand such a better chance of succeeding if you earn these things and don't just buy these things and don't just use them as distractions to not start. Because you will not have a great 2016 in podcasting if you take the next 9 months waiting to get all your ducks in order first. Because then we're going to be sitting here in 2017 and it's going to be even more competitive than it was last year. There's going to be even more shows. There's going to be even bigger opportunities, but it's going to be just that much harder.
Yep. All right, let's move on to number four. What is your next step for success in 2016, Mr. Nasser?
Repurpose your content as much as you possibly can. So this is part of systems. This is part of the repetitive nature of podcasting. And I've seen the most growth in my show over the past 6 to 9 months when I've really, really grabbed on and started to use repurposing of content to grow my audience. And that's simply because I think I've let go of the fact that I've somehow earlier led myself to believe that people who are in my audience read, listen to, or watch every single piece of content I create. And they absolutely don't. Nobody does. Nobody has that amount of time. And so
I when do.
You're always lurking. You're always just like, but it's just one of those things that if you create a good piece of content on your show, get those transcripts turned like written out if you want, turn it into a great blog post or two, maybe go use it with slide deck. You could turn it into a YouTube video and you can turn it into guest posts if you want, or also use it on your newsletter. You just, when you find something that works, don't be just like, yes. And that's only audio that works. No, you need to repurpose that and take that message to other places because it's one thing. It doesn't take twice as much work to create a blog post from an episode you've already done. I mean, you might already have even notes that you've used to create that show. So it can be quite simply, probably with only half as much work, you can now create a great blog post out of it. Everybody that listens to audio doesn't read on the website. So you have to know that you're finding different people. And it's just too hard to create new content for every single thing you have to do. So repurpose as much as you possibly can and just let go of the fear that somebody's going to listen to you, then read you, then watch you, then and be like, oh my, this guy says the same thing over and over again. And they really don't care. Nobody's thinking about you that much. Nobody's thinking about me that much. And when you let go of that, you will exponentially grow your audience.
Yep. Step number five is release a bonus episode and maybe do it in a different format. I am always pleasantly surprised by the reaction that bonus episodes outside of the normal course of releases, how well they go. You know, we haven't done this in a while with the showrunner, but we did it back when we were launching the course. You know, we did some bonus episodes. I did an episode where I basically did an audio recording of my presentation from Authority Rainmaker. And all of those episodes did really well. We've done it with the assembly call. And I was going back through what made me think of this is I was going back through some of my data, you know, on which shows have really done well. And obviously our post-game shows do well because it's our bread and butter. But the bonus episodes that we'll do, like an NCAA tournament preview show at the end of the year, and these are bonus episodes because they're not post-game shows right after games. It's maybe the middle of the week or, you know, during the off-season when we do interviews with, you know, ex-players or season previews, whatever. They do really, really well. And, you know, find those opportunities. You know, sometimes your audience can get into a rhythm, and getting into a rhythm is good, but sometimes you want to break that rhythm a little bit, and it helps get maybe some attention that you've lost in a certain sense. And it can, you know, it can jolt your audience back into, whoa, there's not usually a show here from on a Friday. Let me take a look at this real quick. And there's that bonus, but there's also, if you do it in a different format, it can be a little bit of an experiment, because maybe if your audience really likes this one format, maybe you don't switch everything that you're doing, but you can take something from that worked, an element from it, and add it into what you're doing regularly. And it's not a drastic change to where you're making a huge change to what you're already doing that's already working, but it's a good way to get out there and try some things. You know, do a little bit of something different, give your audience a different taste, see how they react, and it can also just reinvigorate your own enthusiasm a little bit. Because, you know, systems are great, but for some of us, systems can also make things a little bit boring at times. And sometimes just stepping outside of that, doing something new, it can invigorate you, it can invigorate your audience. And so if you haven't done that, try it. And I can tell you just from my personal experience and the experience that we've had on the Showrunner, those episodes have been received really well, and I've learned a lot from them. And so, you know, make a real conscious effort, even if you only do one in 2016. Do it once, see how it works for you. My guess is that you'll be pleasantly surprised, just like we were.
I should do that.
Oh, for Hack the Entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should.
It's crazy. I'm at like 170 episodes. I've never done a bonus. I think about it a lot, and then it overwhelms me to be like, well, what should I do? But I'm going to do that. 2016, it's one of my steps to a better show.
I like it. I was just about to make a football joke for something you could do with Mike Kafka, who you interviewed.
Yep.
And then I realized you knew nothing about football, and so it wouldn't go over well.
I know everything about football, man.
Anyway, the joke was going to be sack the entrepreneur because he's a quarterback, and when you tackle the quarterback behind the line of scrimmage, it's a sack.
I know that.
I know.
I think I am.
Anyway. All right. Already one lame joke for me in 2016.
And it's funny because we're recording in 2015 and you're already ahead of the gate.
That's right. That is right. All right.
So number six.
Step number six.
Step number six is I encourage everyone to reach out to their quote unquote competitors in your market, meaning other podcasters, other bloggers, other anybody that's sort of an expert or creating content in your market. They're not your competitors. They are just people that exist with you. I guess they coexist would be the word, with you in your market. And they have audience. That audience will be likely, if they are into that person's content, they're also going to be into yours. And like I've said, when somebody listens to a podcast about podcasting, they typically don't just listen to one podcast about podcasting. They listen to as many as they can find that also they kind of relate to the hosts. So you need to reach out. You need to try and get onto other people's shows as a guest. You need to have them on your show because they can also hopefully promote to their audience. And you could maybe do guest posting. You can do so many things. You can do cross promote, do blabs together, do webinars together. Do anything you can together to cross-promote to each other's audiences, and this will help you so much building building your own audience and also just building sort of friendships and networking within your market. So stop thinking of them as competitors. They're just people that coexist with you in your market.
Yep. I love this idea. You know, one of the biggest ways that we've grown the audience at Assembly Call is that I host the podcast for InsideTheHall.com, which is another Indiana basketball blog. And you could look at them as a competitor or make that a friendly relationship and do something that's beneficial for both. And it's worked out really well. I don't know if you have, but I've gone on Podcasters Roundtable with a lot of other people who do podcasts about podcasting. And, you know, it's been, again, beneficial for everybody. So I love that tip. Love that step, Johnny.
Thanks, man.
Number seven is give journaling a try if you don't already. Now, maybe you do already journal. I have been an inconsistent journaler in my life, but I always like it. And that's one of my personal goals for 2016 is to become more consistent. And one of the ways I'm going to do this, I got a great Christmas gift. If you go to the site CarveOn, CarveOn.com, it's this incredible site. I think they're from Ireland and they make these handcrafted leather goods. I found it because I got my dad a little golf scorecard and you can customize it, you know, with the person's name on it. And it just looks so sharp and it's so nice. And I found that they do journal covers. And so my wonderful wife, Heather, got me one for Christmas with Primility written on the bottom of it. It's this beautiful bright red. And I love it. And I've already, you know, ever since I got it, I've already been journaling in the morning. And what I love about it, it's like this morning when I was journaling, you know, I sat down and I'm thinking, and I remembered two kind of, you know, lessons, thoughts that I had had the day before that I had forgotten to write down that will end up being episodes for Primality Primer. And if I hadn't journaled in the morning, I might have forgotten about them. And so it's just, it's a great way to, you know, just, you know, reaffirm what your goals are for the day, reaffirm what your big ideas are. Like I love to start mine out with, you know, I'm grateful for so many things today, and then list out a couple of things that I'm grateful for because I just love the mindset that puts me in. And then I love that today it reminded me of these two big ideas that I had thought about the day before and just forgotten to jot down. And so if you haven't tried journaling, give it a try because it can be a great way to really develop the thoughts that you're having, further develop them so that when it does come time to discuss them on a podcast, it's the fourth or fifth time that you are working with these ideas in your head rather than the second or maybe third time. And I think that'll make your explanations come out better. It'll create something better for your audience. And most importantly, it'll just make sure that great ideas don't slip through the cracks because you've always got this time in the morning or at night or whatever works to really sit down, focus, and let those ideas come back to you because that's what I find always happens for me. So give journaling a try if you don't already.
So I don't already, but I'm really intrigued by it as you explain it. Do you have like a template or like what does journaling mean to you?
You know, I've tried that because I've done the 5-minute journal and I like that and that's very templated. You know, and so I did that for a while. I also tried doing it with an Evernote. Like I set up my own template. I kind of took the 5-minute journal way and set up my own template. And, you know, I found that I like it to be a little bit more free form. So I just have a blank notebook now, but I like having a place to start because I always found that for me with journaling, one of my biggest issues would be I'd open up the page and I wouldn't quite know where to start. Like even though it was a private journal, I would feel like I needed some profound statement to begin with. And so I've just started again at the beginning. I just always write, I am grateful for so many things today. And then I'll list out a couple things that I'm grateful for. And then it's like during the process of writing that, other stuff comes in. And as soon as I'm done with that paragraph, I'm ready for these new things. Like this morning, I was ready. Oh, two big lessons I learned yesterday that I don't want to forget. One, two. And so just having that same thing at the beginning that gets my pen moving, gets my brain moving, it removes that almost fear of the blank page, I guess, which again is weird to say for a private journal, but it just removes kind of that inertia to get started. And then I just find once my pen gets going, I have to stop myself, you know, otherwise I could sit there for hours and keep writing. So,
yeah.
Any, you know, and again, it probably just depends on what works for you. Like I found the 5-minute journal to be a little too templated for me, although it really helped me start to develop the habit. So whatever way kind of gets you into it, and then I think you'll start to figure out what works best for you and what keeps you coming back each night or each morning, and then just go in that direction and let it ride.
So kind of like everything, you just have to kind of keep working at it until you find your one.
Yeah.
And that can even move.
Yeah, exactly. And don't expect perfection. You know, just get in there and just put your thoughts out. You know, whatever you have to do to get going, and then just let it flow. Don't judge. You know, be compassionate with yourself and just let your thoughts go out there. Whatever is the most pressing thing on your mind.
Nice. I love it.
What are we on? Number 7 or number 8?
It's hard to know sometimes.
The next step to a better show in 2016. Who cares? The numbers are irrelevant.
The next step, and this is my final step. Well, I might come up with another step, but the final step that I have written down is don't be anyone else. So this thing we deal with as showrunners, and I've argued this point with people because it's all about finding your voice and all this, right? Everyone, like, you have to be unique and stuff, but people often, they think it's easier than it actually is. And I argue that it's not really easy to find your voice and to be unique. It's not as easy as it seems like it should be, because we're influenced by people who are ahead of us, people who have started shows before us, people whose shows we admire. And so I think just within us and subconsciously, we do sort of bring in other people sometimes. So this idea of not being anyone else is really just trying to, the best way I could find to do it was to show and really kind of put forth, I guess, my quirks, not maybe quirks, but things that really do truly make me who I am and not anyone else. So you'll notice that, I mean, I talk about a lot just like being a drummer in a punk rock band. That has nothing to do with my show. That has nothing at all on the surface to do with my show or me being that Canadian from up in the north in the snow. It has nothing, again, to do with my show. Most of my audience is in the United States, and they don't listen to punk rock. And most punk rock would offend them and they wouldn't be into it, but it makes them understand me better, and it makes this sort of personal connection. And it also gets rid of the people that will not be truly, truly into me and will not ever truly become part of my audience, which is great. I don't want those people. I either want people to really like me and my show or to really not like me and my show. And this is strictly done by allowing your true self and like who you really are. And even to a point where you have to kind of push it a little more than it even might be naturally, to push those, the weird thing about you or those weird couple things that make you different, and push them forward. And it seems awkward and it seems weird at first. And it seems like maybe something that, will make people not like you. And that's kind of exactly the point. Because the people who do like it will like you a lot and they'll really have this connection to you. So I think that it's essential for us to all find these things in 2016 and then push them forth to your potential audience and to your audience that is there, because it seems like they won't really take to it well, but they really, really, really will. And it will, you cannot have a show that does really well without having a host that is just, I mean, think of like Howard Stern or any person that runs either a TV show or a radio show or a podcast. It's the host. There's something about that host that you resonate with and that makes them very much unique, almost separate from the show, but it's not, if that makes any sense. It's just such an absolutely essential part of creating a show that is going to have an impact. And so I would love you to find one thing or two things about you and really amplify them and start pushing them out to your audience and potential audience.
I love it. So wait, you said that was your last tip? You're not going to remind folks to be human in 2016?
No, I'm done with it.
That's so 2015. Okay, so that was number 7. So I have 5 more, and I'll go through them relatively quickly. But several of these I actually wrote down, Johnny, with you in mind. And so I want to get your thoughts on them, especially this first one, which is do something scary before you think you're ready, right? I want everybody to think about this. I want you to think about this listening right now. What is something that you're scared to do, you know you should do, you don't think you're quite ready. Maybe your site's not ready for it, or whatever. Like, for whatever reason, you don't feel like you're ready and you're scared. I want you to just do it. Because I'll tell you a real quick example is that, you know, I've mentioned before that for the assembly call, we were really going to try and work on the listener support angle for generating revenue this year. And it's just the whole idea of asking for money, asking for donations has been so weird and awkward for me. And even in the off season, I set up our support page, got everything set up for PayPal. But as we're going through the whole first 2 months of the season, I just could never bring myself to say it. You know, my calls to action in the show would always be about signing up for the email list, and they would always work. But I just, even when I had planned to say, okay, let me talk about the listener support thing, something just kept me from doing it. And it was fear, and it was just not quite thinking that we were ready to do it. And so I finally said, enough's enough. Let me give this a try. And an amazing thing has happened, right? People have started donating. People have started supporting the show, and they've been really enthusiastic to do it. And all it took was me just saying the words, just reminding people, hey, we are listener supported. If you like what we're doing and you want to support us and support the internship program that we have and everything else, you can go to assemblycall.com/support. There are several ways to support the show. We would love it if you would. We'd really appreciate it, which is not hard at all. But there was just this big wall of fear and reluctance that was preventing me from doing it. And it wasn't that hard of a wall to scale. It just required saying the words, but I had built it up so big in my head. And then as soon as I started doing it, pretty much every time I've done that now, we've had donations come in. They've been bigger than I've expected. And it's just, it's another great lesson in, oh yeah, that big thing that I was afraid of, there was nothing really to be afraid of. And actually, it's gone better than I even anticipated. And there's probably something like that out there for you. So whatever it is, whatever you're fearful of, whatever you don't think you're ready for, just go out and start it. What's the worst thing that can happen, right? I mean, consider what the worst thing that can happen is. I guess I shouldn't make an assumption. You can't just go out and do anything. But if the worst case scenario really isn't that bad, then just give it a try, because I bet it will go better than you think. If you've actually been, you know, earnest in your preparation, if you have a good relationship with your audience, you know, those need to be there. But I bet if you do, that big scary thing really shouldn't be that big and scary after all. I mean, Johnny, you did this when you launched Hack the Entrepreneur, and you did this when you put your book out, and you've done this time and time again and consistently succeeded.
Oh, yeah, but like 99% of them fail along the way. That's two things I've succeeded in the last year and a half. I've done so many things that I don't know how to do. I've done, and they've quote unquote failed, but they kind of roll into a lesson that I take. And you know what I mean? Like, if I hadn't started writing a newsletter every week and like writing ones that completely like just don't resonate with anybody, writing ones that completely do, all those things, none of the book wouldn't have happened. If I hadn't have figured out and worked for like months on trying to come up with a system to actually get transcripts created in a way that was cost effective and didn't take me a ton of time, the book wouldn't exist. And those were like tons of failures along the way. And yes, there's one big win at the end of it, but it's this idea that you can't forget that none of us know what we're doing until we've done it. You can look at myself, you can look at Jared and say, well, it's easy for you. It's like, well, sure, it's easy for me. It's like, I guess podcasting is easy or interviewing people is easy because I've done it a ton now. But literally like a year and a half ago, I had never interviewed anybody in my life. I had never thought of even writing a book. I had never created an online course. Now I've done all of those things quite successfully, but there's like hundreds and hundreds of steps in there that I just kept screwing up and just learning from them. And then you just have to do it. And it's like there's nobody that's ever been born with like and has already like interviewed 1,000 people and is just really good at it. It doesn't exist. Like when you think about it that way, it's like, oh, yeah, you're right. No, nobody. But I mean, you look at people like, oh, I love Marc Maron, the way he interviews. Yeah, he's been doing it for 20 years. But he started at one point where he's just like, I'm going to interview somebody. I'm going to be freaked out. I'm going to suck. And it doesn't matter. I'm going to get better. And you have to do that. There's absolutely no way to do anything you want to do, whether you set 3-month goals or year goals, no matter what you aim to do in the next year. If you don't do things that you don't know how to do, you will never get to where you want to be. It's just absolutely impossible. Whether that's like getting on Periscope and trying to go deep with your audience, or whether that's getting on webinars and trying to sell a new product or your show, you have to do this. You have to do these things for the first time. You can watch webinars and be like, well, they're professionals. Of course they are. They've done it now 100 times, but they did it the first time. It's just how it has to be. So please absolutely listen to Jared with this one, because you have to do these things, and you will look back on them months or years later and be like, wow, I'm so good at this now. But remember that first time? I was sweating. My palms were sweaty. I was shaking. But whatever. It's how it works. It's how everything works. And you can look at everybody else and think that it didn't work like that for them, but it absolutely did. You're just usually seeing it, and you're hearing about them now. You're hearing about me and Jared as podcasters now, because we went through the fears and the doubts and worked our way to where now we can, you can listen to us as podcasters, because we've found our way and made the mistakes. But you have to just jump in.
Hey, you know how every time we do those blab sessions, people remark about your t-shirts and how much they love them? So I just had an idea for the official showrunner t-shirt from a quote that you just had. I'm freaked out. I'm going to suck, but I'm going to get better. The showrunner. Because that's it. Like, that's where we both were. And you're right. The only difference is we've just done a lot of the freaking out. We've done a lot of the sucking. And so we've gotten better. And other than that, there's not much of a difference between us and the people who are listening to this. So
no, there isn't.
Remember that.
Yeah. And that's, but people fail to think back to the time where, like, wow, Jared actually had to hit record for the first time at one point. Like, just like you weren't just always a podcaster.
It's so
just
awkward. Nobody.
I know, exactly. Like, so awkward. It's just, it was so hard. Like, it was just, I mean, I remember doing my first interview. I remember doing my first 20 interviews and just panicking beforehand. Yeah. Just like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but this is so much fun.
Yeah.
It's just what you do. And it's so much fun and so rewarding on the other end. But you have to start. So please, please, please do. And start in January. Don't wait. Don't be like, I'm going to start doing blabs or start doing Periscope or start interviewing people in March. No, just start in January. Do once. Do one simple, easy thing. Overcome that fear, or at least work through it, or at least deal with it. But do it. Yep. You'll thank us. Trust me.
All right. So let me go on here with, I think this is 9 and 10. So here are a couple things, right? Number one is to find ways to practice intentional gratitude with both your listeners and your teammates on your show. And what do I mean by that? Well, maybe you use marketing automation so that the fifth time that people come to your podcast page, you send them a quick email that says, thank you, right? Like, I set this up with Rainmaker for the assembly call. When people have come to our episode 10 times for post-game shows, I have an email that goes out that thanks them. And that's a good way to do it on a massive scale. For people who you know are your core listeners that have been around for a while, ask them for their address and send them a thank you note. It's not with anything in mind like, okay, I'm going to send them a thank you note now and then they'll give me money later. It's, I'm going to thank this person, because without them, there would be no audience for me to talk to. Send them a note, a handwritten note. I'm telling you, there's an extra connection that you can make. There's obviously a great connection that you can make with a podcast, right? Because my voice right now is in your ear. But imagine an actual card, a piece of paper with my pen markings on it that was in my possession that now you're holding. There's a different kind of connection that you make with that. And you can do it with your listeners. It may seem awkward at first, but just do it. And it won't feel awkward after that. And people will really appreciate it. And you can do it with your teammates too. You know, maybe it's a co-host. Maybe it's the person who edits your show. You know, maybe it's people who have been on as interviews. Send them a note, even if it's just an email, if you don't want to do the handwritten note. But find ways to really be intentional with your gratitude. And I found, you know, I think that's one of the biggest keys that has helped me create audiences, is being really thankful for audience members and letting them know. And I think it gives you, it will give you benefit of the doubt. And what I mean by that is, you know, people realize you're not just this podcaster behind a microphone. It makes you more of a friend. And I just think that that is so important, and it'll help people be encouraged to spread the word. And the next one is, make 2016 your year of empathy. All right. Maybe you don't want to do it as grand as this, although I'm kind of considering doing this for myself. But really the point here is the same as practice intentional gratitude, practice intentional empathy. because I'm not sure that there is a more important skill for anyone who wants to host a show than empathy. Because you need empathy to understand your audience and to create content that will truly serve a need for your audience. You need empathy to be a good interviewer, to listen, to ask good questions, to get on the same level with that person. And every step of the way, you know, John, it's like you talked about how every single thing that we do as a podcaster is recurring. Well, every single thing that we do as a podcaster also requires empathy, right? I mean, even just how you work with your editor requires empathy. Putting yourself in their shoes. Are they overworked? Should you get this episode to them a week early because next week is Christmas? Like, all of those things will help make you better because it will improve your relationships with the people you work with, the people you're talking to, the people that you're interviewing, and that will make your show better and will help you take it to the next level. And empathy, same with gratitude. It's not like we ever reach a point where we've got it. Like, okay, I'm perfect at gratitude. I'm perfect at empathy. We can always get better at it. We can always practice it and be more intentional with it and make it just more a part of what we do. And so I kind of lump those together because to me, they're the two big things I'm focusing on is be grateful, you know, practice empathy. And I think it can't do anything but help you get to the next level, help take you further from wherever you are right now.
You can. I love it.
Okay. So here are the final two. And I'll go quickly through number 11 because we talked about it in our last episode. But listen to one of your last shows from 2015 and jot down three things you can improve on. And then just revisit that list each time you record, at least for the first month or two of 2016. So for me, for example, I talked about this with the assembly call. I think sometimes, especially at the opening of the show, I talk too much. And I didn't realize that until I actually listened. So I want to make sure that my intros are a little shorter and sweeter. Also saying, you know, too much. I want to make sure that I'm focusing on not saying, you know, as much. So these are the types of things that if you just go on and never listen to your own show, you may not realize them. And that's why it's important every now and then, as hard as it is, and believe me, I hate doing it, but just listen to your own show, power through it, write down lists of things that you can get better at, and then don't just forget about it. Actually keep that list handy because it's good. You know, right before you record, if you remember those things, then you'll be more likely to actually correct them as you go through the recording. And then finally, number 12, the 12th step for a better show in 2016. And Johnny, this is a lesson that I learned from you this year as well. It's to create or reinvigorate your artwork. I don't think that there is anything that we did with the assembly call this year that was more important than getting a logo. There's something about it that made it seem more official for the members of our team, our new interns who came in, our audience, for me. Like, there was just something about it that took it to the next level. And it seems like a silly thing. Oh, you just added a logo. You created, you know, a logo and some new artwork. But it made a huge difference to the point where now, over the past couple of weeks, we're actually selling merchandise with our logo on it. And people are buying it because it's another way to support the show and because it just makes them feel like part of the team, part of the group. So don't underestimate. And this goes back to what I talked about with upgrading your equipment, where you need to earn this. But once you've earned this, you know, it's something that is worth investing in both time and money if you've earned it, creating really good artwork that you're proud of, that your audience will get excited about, because it can reinvigorate your enthusiasm and your audience's enthusiasm for your show. And Johnny, this is something that you did toward the end of 2015. And I think you experienced something similar when you did that.
Yeah, I did. And I was kind of shocked by how much of a difference it made. And I didn't mention it when you mentioned that whole if you've earned a thing, but I mean, I had literally artwork I spent like $10 on for the first like 140 episodes or something. So I felt like once it came to, I was just like, I need something to stand out. I need something simple. And this is all I'm going to use. And then I'm just going to go ahead with the show. But then at 140, it was like, oh, maybe I've earned new artwork. Mm-hmm. So I did it. And it really did have a profound effect on my audience that existed. And then on finding new audience, it really kind of upped the game of the show. And I think it even ups the game more when people outside of yourself and like out in potential audience, they feel that you've earned it maybe too. You know what I mean? Like, you're a show that's been around for a long time. You've done fairly well. And now all of a sudden you've upped your game and you've kind of raised your whole level. And it's great. I think it's really, really helpful. And I love your artwork. So it's essential to having the good artwork. And I honestly don't even know if you could create that good of artwork beforehand, because I don't know if you understand your show and your audience necessarily well enough before you've even launched a first episode.
Yeah. No, there's no way. There's no way. So what do you think? Do we keep this episode under a half hour?
Oh, yeah, probably. Well, we probably need a 13th step, because maybe the 13th step should be to not create numbered step lists that are even numbers, because they really don't work very well. So 13 steps to a better show in 2016.
Number I like it.
Is create odd steps.
Create odd steps. Well, because they stand out better.
They do.
Research has proven that. Although people might now think that this episode is unlucky because it's 13.
Well, it's unlucky if you've just spent the last 55 minutes with us, probably.
Yeah.
Although I've had fun.
I have had fun, too. Yeah. It's been great.
I've remembered how to record.
Yes.
Yay.
See? And look at that. You know, I just hit record and everything was okay. See, in what we did at the beginning of this episode, there's a lesson right there. Hit record, even before you're ready or even before your co-host is ready. What's the worst thing that could happen?
It's true.
I guess you could have quit and gotten real mad. That would have sucked.
Flip my desk over.
What are you doing? Whoa.
I wasn't ready.
Dude, be human. Come on.
Yeah.
You ready for our first podcast recommendation of 2016?
So ready. So ready.
Let's do it. So this podcast recommendation is from the Tim Ferriss Show, and obviously that's a very popular show. You don't need me to recommend that, but there was a recent episode that he did with Derek Sivers. It came out on December 28th. It's the second episode he's done with Derek Sivers, but this was one of those in-between episodes where he lets someone, you know, that he's interviewed before kind of take over the show and they take questions. And it's called Derek Sivers Reloaded on Success Habits and Billionaires with Perfect Abs. And it's just great. I mean, I just, you know, Derek Sivers' outlook on life and on work and on success is extremely refreshing. And there was one part in particular, I think someone asked him a question. It was something like, who is, like, when you think of a successful person, who's the first person who comes to mind? And I loved his answer about that. And I don't want to give too much of it away because I want you to listen to the episode, and he explains it 8 million times better than I will. But the way that he flipped the question on its head to make it more meaningful and to create a more unique interaction with the person asking the question, I thought was brilliant. I loved it. And so listen to that episode. It's not, you know, it's not one of those 3-hour Tim Ferriss marathons. This is like a 38-minute episode. It went real quick. I made mushroom soup from scratch last night, and I listened to this episode while making mushroom soup, and it was the perfect companion. So Derek Sivers takes over the Tim Ferriss Show, the perfect companion to mushroom soup.
I'm a huge Derek Sivers fan, so I need to listen to this.
He's fantastic. So we've got a call to action for you all, and we mentioned it at the beginning, and we will mention it now at the end, which is that we are having a public blab session. If you don't know what blab is, it's blab.im. It's like Periscope, but it's more of a panel discussion than just one person talking. And it's going to be called 15 Steps to a Perfect Podcast Launch. The URL to get there is rainmaker.fm/steps, STEPS. That will take you to the page at Blab. And we want you to join us because it's going to be great. Johnny, do you want to give? And it's at 12 p.m., by the way, 12 p.m. Central, 1 o'clock Eastern time. And we're going to base this on the lesson that you did inside of the Showrunner Podcasting course, 15 Steps to a Perfect Podcast Launch. Johnny, if you want to give folks a quick preview of what they can expect.
They can. So this is, I guess, based on the idea of you have your show ready to go. I guess we'll go over how many episodes you should have in the can, sort of like already recorded, ready before you launch. And then the 15 steps to sort of building your launch team, if you will, and sort of hitting the ground running. Because although I believe strongly that 2016 is the year that podcasts are going to mature and get even bigger and better. You are right in having the thought that there are a lot of shows, and there are a lot of shows launching all the time, but you will have the benefit of launching perfectly and launching in the right way, which most people don't do. And to miss out on this first 8 weeks of traction is really, really detrimental to your show's success in the medium and long term. So we've come up with this 15-step plan that is basically a checklist that you'll also be able to get if you're part of the Blab session with us. And it'll just simply lay out all the steps you need to do for the weeks leading up to launch and then the 8 weeks during launch. So I guess that's all I can give for right now, because I just want you to join. It's going to be fun. Plus, you can ask us questions, and it's literally just a live sort of webinar setting, and it's a really cool place to check out.
Yep. And even if you have no interest in learning about a podcast launch, like you've already launched, you're just not interested in that, there's still two other reasons to go. Number one, if you're not doing Blabs or if you're not using live video to interact with your audience, come watch as an example, you know, and see how we do it. Get comfortable with the interface of Blab, because it's, you know, we've talked about, you know, using video before to go deeper with your audience. And I think it's that can be something. Maybe that's one of those scary things that you do in 2016. So use this as an example. Number two, you get to see what t-shirt Johnny's wearing, which is always a crowd favorite. People always love it. Frankly, it's the only reason I show up for these Blabs. So I hope you have a
actually,
good one.
an interesting thing that you mentioned, if you're not launching a podcast, absolutely true. I followed, I believe it was 12 or 13 of these steps to launch my book.
Oh, wow.
And it worked like really, really well. It's the only book I've ever launched. So, I mean, I don't know how they're supposed to go, but I was blown away by how well it worked. And it can be really the same thing. I mean, obviously I didn't get to use New and Noteworthy, but I mean, there's an Amazon sort of version of that. But it was really sort of building the momentum and excitement around it, building your sort of launch team. So this, you can use this to launch anything. Or again, if you have a show that's been out for 6 months or a year and you feel like you've earned new artwork, you can create a relaunch of your show following these exact same steps. It's super beneficial. It really works, and it's kind of a tried and true thing now for many, many podcasts. I mean, hundreds of podcasts that have gone through the course, and also for my recent book. So it works for many things. So join us.
I love it. Rainmaker.fm/steps. You know what's interesting, Johnny, here as we close, we missed our episode on Christmas week. But now it's just like we've done a double episode because we're well over an hour now.
I know. So we have all this pent up podcasting.
I know. I'm glad we were able to get it out.
I'm glad we didn't take like a month off, because it'd be like a 4-hour episode.
Oh, man. That'd be crazy.
Ooh, 397 steps to a perfect episode.
Yes. Maybe we'll do that next week.
Yeah, with the checklist.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Hopefully we see you on Friday at the Blab session. If not, we will for sure talk to you next Wednesday on another brand new episode of The Showrunner.